And we are holding on Sadiq Allah from a bay about halfway down the wide lines. One wing of the Kaaba. Mishnah said a kotis and tiyosa of the hula, that if somebody chops down his own tree, he's not allowed to do that, but he's fatter from having to pay because there's nobody to pay. Whereas if somebody else were to chop down his trees, they'd be chayv, and therefore Rabbi Akiva is telling the guy, by analogy, she uncovered her hair, that's her problem, you're not allowed to uncover hers, and if you do, you have to pay the penalty. So in this connection, Tony Rabbi Baba Chana Kamedi Rav, Rabbi Baba Chana taught a braisa in front of Rav that went like this. If one person says, if Reuben says, Shoyi Horagta, if Shimon, if Reuben claims, if Reuben claims in Beis Din, Shoyi Horagta, or not in Beis Din, out of Beis Din, whatever, you killed my shur, or Nitiyose Katasta, or you chopped down my trees, and Shimon answers that, after Amarti Lilahoga, after Amarti Lilahoga, well, you told me to kill it, or you told me to chop it down. Potter, then he's potter from payment. Amalei. No, because it's not necessarily an Avera, but wait. No, the better question is, never mind, Inshlech was not Avera. So what, so every time somebody does a Nezik, he's going to claim that? Yes. Amalei, so Rav tells him, you came a shock because Chayel of Beriosis. And then you're not allowing anybody to have a life. Whole community. Does he have the ability to just Samazoi claim without any proof that you told me to do it? Different Rishonim, by the way, the Rashba and the Raza and others talk about what's the exact situation here. Are we talking about the you're not leaving any life for people. In other words, any time somebody commits a nezik and then you're brought to Beis Din, you're always going to say, well, you told me to do it. You don't have any proof. So I was going to say, the Rashba, the Raza, a couple of other Rishonim talk about the pros and cons. Are we talking about that there's Edim that he did it, or are we talking about when there's no Edim? If there's no Edim, maybe you could argue, for never mind that, he has a Megali. I could just as well claim that I didn't chop it down, etc. Okay. Anyway, so, Amalei. Well, so that's, there's different ways of looking at it. Hey, Amalei, so Rabbi Baba Chana asked him, should I erase this Braisa? Is it a mistaken Braisa and I should erase it from my collection? They didn't have the Braisas were written down, by the way. They were all oral. But erasing it means, in other words, you know, I'll delete it from what I have in my repertoire and I won't tell it over anymore. Amalei, Rav tells him, look, no, you don't have to erase it. It's not necessarily a mistaken Braisa, but it does need a detail. To Tauge Masnitzach, you should, from now on, when you say over this Braisa, you should explain that it's talking about b'shor ha'omid lahariga or v'ilana omid l'tzitza. You're talking about an ox which is designated to be killed. For example, Rashi says it already killed somebody. So even, let's say, I mean, based in might, if there's a based in with smicha, then they're going to judge it and give it skila. But okay, I guess the situation might be, let's say, for example, there isn't such a based in. The owner himself then has the responsibility of getting rid of it because it's a dangerous animal. Similar to what we had at the end of the previous pedic about a dangerous dog.
So Rav knew that it was a specific case.
We would rather not have to say that the Braisa is completely mistaken, but we can find a case where the Braisa is correct. Namely, if the ox was going to be killed anyway, or the over Illinois Imid Lutzitza, or a tree that was meant to be cut down. The Rashi gives two examples. Number one, the tree is an Asherah, it's a tree that was used to worship Kavod Dezara, and then there's a mitzvah to cut it down, and it says in this week's parsha. Or Rashi gives another example. Let's say it's leaning over to Shofar Avim. It may at some point fall down and kill somebody, so therefore, yeah. So then, in that case, then he has a valid claim. It was meant this animal was going to be killed, or this tree was going to be chopped down anyway. I went ahead and did it. Okay, then the question is, Yochim, I took my katan light. Fine, then what's the owner's claim in that case anyway? What is he trying to claim? The answer is, Domalei anobe in lemebet ha-mitzvah. Because he can argue, I wanted to do this mitzvah. So in other words, so Reuben is saying, I intended to do this mitzvah myself. Shimon counterclaims and says, instead, you decided you weren't going to do it yourself, you delegated it to me.
So it's a matter of proof.
Okay, that's that again. That's what gets into the question of were there Edim, whether he actually chopped it down or not. But anyway, what's the point if he missed the mitzvah? The Tanya, as we learn in a Braisa, when the Pasuk is v'shapach v'chisa, when it talks about the mitzvah, Torah tells us about the mitzvah of kisi adam, that if you shech a wild animal or a bird, you have to cover the blood. The expression is v'shapach, he should spill the blood, v'chisa, and he should cover it. Implying, misha shapach v'chasa, the same person who did the shechting and spilled the blood is the same one who should be doing the covering, who should be doing the kisi adam. Obviously, we don't do that, for example, when we do kaparis. We ourselves don't chef the chickens because we don't know how to, but the shaykh leaves it to us to do the kisi adam, so we at least participate in the mitzvah. Fine, if you want to do that, we'll...
He's
the one who did the shchita, though. He's the one who did the v'shachat. No. It happened one time that one person shechted, somebody else got there ahead of him and covered the blood. And Rav Gamliel ordered him to pay the guy 10 gold coins as payment for having taken the mitzvah away from him. Again, if the person gives you permission, that's different. The shechet, because you yourself bought the chicken, and you're only delegating it to him, the shechet says you don't know how to, therefore he returns you the mitzvah.
Who has the obligation, if I buy the chicken and I handed it to the shechet?
The shechet himself probably does, because he's the v'shachah. However, he can give it away to you. That's not a problem. The point is, in this case, that another person jumped in there and did it without permission. So he took away the mitzvah, and actually, Tosfos says it's not so much the mitzvah, the schar of a mitzvah itself. You know, mitzvah doesn't really have a monetary value. It's that he took away from him the opportunity to make the bracha. So, okay, Tosfos says, okay, in the case of a shur that's supposed to be killed or a tree that's supposed to be chopped down, there you have to talk about the mitzvah, because there's no bracha involved. But when there's a bracha, then primarily the payment is for the bracha. Tosfos gives, by the way, a case that one time a person was called up was asked to be the Baal Kore in Shul. Instead, somebody else jumped in and preempted him as Baal Kore. And Rabbi Natan said what you should do is you caused him to, no, maybe not Baal Kore, actually, he was supposed to get an aliyah, and somebody else jumped in and took the aliyah instead. So Rabbi Natan tells him, you were supposed to have made two, you deprived him of the ability to make two brachas, therefore give him a chicken to shecht. And he'll be able to make two brachas instead, one for the shchita and one for the kisi adam. Then Tosfos continues that the Ri disagrees with that. In Shulchan Aruch, it brings this concept in Choshen Mishpat, and also the Torah brings it in Yerodeya as well, in Hilchos Shchita. Practically speaking, it says in Shulchan Aruch, this is considered a knas, according to the different Rishonim talk about different possibilities that Amam holds, that it still exists nowadays also. That's not a knas, but most other Rishonim hold that it's a knas, and therefore, as usual, only a Beis Din Smuchin can do it. So nowadays, then, a Beis Din would be responsible to fine the guy some amount for having taken away the other guy's mitzvah and bracha, but not necessarily 10 gold coins. Okay, since we're talking about chopping down trees, Rav Dikla de Torn Kava also mitzvah. If a palm tree has a kav of dates on it, then you're not allowed to chop it down. Mace, it's a lot less than a palm tree can normally produce, but that's enough for it to be considered important. Mesvig, where it says, I have a contradiction. How much does there have to be on an olive tree that you shouldn't be able to chop it down? A quarter of a calf. So why by a palm should it be a whole calf? And the answer is, that's the difference. Shiny Jason, the Chshivi. Olive trees are different. They're more important. Even a quarter of a calf, which is less than a pound of olives, is considered important. With dates, you need a whole calf. Reb Chanina says, my son Shivchas only passed away, the only thing he ever did wrong is that he chopped down a fig tree not in its time. Meaning, in other words, the Pashtos meaning that it was still producing fruit, and he chopped it down, so therefore he was over on Baal Pashtos. A number of Achronim talk about what happened over here. Is it that maybe the Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid mentions in his Tzava, one of the famous things in Tzava, Rabbi Yehuda HaChassid, is you shouldn't chop down trees because it's dangerous. You could put your life in danger. The pastor is based on this Gemara. So that's different
Achronim. He was hit by the tree?
No, not necessarily. He died young. And Rav Chanina says, I know, right, Yad Ruach HaKodesh, I know that this was the reason why. So, or maybe it happened shortly afterwards, whatever. So different Achronim talk about the possibilities. Is it then maybe that Me'ikir Adin, if the tree is producing less than a roiva, or a quarter, or a chav, or a roiva, as the case may be, or other examples that the Gemara is going to tell us in a minute, you are allowed to chop it down, but Midas Chassidus is that even in that case you shouldn't, and Shivchas went ahead and did that, so you didn't do anything wrong Me'ikir Adin, but still, as Midas Chassidus. Other Achronim, the Chidah, that's the Chidah argues on that. He says, yeah, Midas Chassidus, he might have gotten some punishment for not to die young. So therefore, he says that no, it was Poshet. He tackled it over on the mitzvah. Yeah. I think what they do nowadays, actually, so the, as the Gemara is going to say in a minute, if there are cases where you are allowed to chop down a tree, if it's in your way, for example, if you need to build, let's say. But I think nowadays what many people do is they call it a goy to do it. That way, you yourself or another yid are not chopping down the tree and then causing potential problems with the savai.
Amar Rav Hina, just any tree or it's
no, it's a fruit tree.
A fruit tree.
Amar Rav Hina, Rav Hina says if the worth of the tree is more than the worth of its fruit. So, for example, you need the wood for building, and the wood will bring a bigger price than the amount of fruit on it. Mutter, then it's allowed. Tanya Namihachi, we learned similarly in Ebraisa. Now, where do we know this concept of Baltashkis, and we're not cutting down trees? The Torah tells us at the end of Parashat Shoftim that when you're waging war against the city, you're besieging a city, don't chop down the trees to make siege works or whatever, like that they need to make out of wood. Don't chop down the fruit trees because it's not right. A fruit tree is not a person, ki adam eitz hasadeh, that could go into the city to save itself from the siege. However, then the next clause continues, if it's a tree that you know that it's not a fruit tree, then you can chop it down and use it to build siege works. So, the Braita says, when the Pasuk says, Rak Eitz Asher Teda, the Pasuk says, only a tree that you know. Now, those words, Rashi says, are extra. The Torah could have just said, if it's not a fruit tree, then yeah. Zeh Ilan Meichel, this means even fruit tree. It means if you know that this is the closest tree to the city that's available to chop down for wood, then you're allowed to. And when the pasuk continues, kilo eitz maicholu, that's not a fruit tree, the ilum sirak, that means a non-fruit bearing tree. So both kinds are mutter. So if in the end the halacha is that in times of necessity you can chop down any kind of tree, fruit tree or not, in a siege, then why does the pasuk start off with kilo eitz maicholu, that it's not a fruit tree? To tell you that there's an order of preference. If you have a choice between a non-fruit bearing tree and a fruit bearing tree, chop down the non-fruit bearing tree first. If then you're still short of wood, then you would think that maybe even this is true even if the wood of the fruit tree is worth more than the fruit. You would think even then maybe you have to start the barren tree. Therefore the pasuk says only. So that's, in other words, you have two exceptions. One is if you don't have any other tree available, and the other is even if you do, if this one's wood is worth more than the small amount of fruit on it, then you're also allowed to.
So we don't talk about the age of the tree. It could be a 1,000-year-old tree or 2,000-year-old
tree.
No, not
specifically.
It doesn't make any difference.
No, I mean, practically speaking, you might not want to use that old tree anyhow because the wood is probably going to be half rotted away. But, yeah, in principle, no, there's nothing specific about the age of the tree.
We found recently a 3,000-year-old tree.
Yeah, they found trees older than that.
Older than that?
Yeah, I think so.
3,000 is the old
tree? I don't know, maybe. Okay. The Gemara tells another case involving chopping down trees. Shmuel Aifile Arise Tamri. One time, Shmuel's sharecropper brought him dates from one of his date trees. Achil, and Shmuel ate some of them. Toimbu Taima Dechamra. He tasted in them a taste of wine. Amalei Maihai. Why do they taste of grapes of wine? Amalei Beni Gufni Kaimi. Because these trees are standing in the vineyard among the grapevines. Which is allowed up the halacha. It's not kalayim, because kalayim is only when you have vegetables or grain or beans
not
or whatever,
trees.
Not trees. But still, Omar, so Shmuel said, machashi b'chamra kolahai. Evidently, then these palm trees are taking up so much nourishment that they're even affecting the grapevines. That some of the essence of the grapevines is getting into the palm tree. Lamacha, I see the makarayu. Tomorrow, I want you to bring me makarayu. So what does that mean? Rashi says two explanations. Mokar can mean their source, meaning in other words their trunk. So in other words, I want you to chop it down and bring me a piece of the trunk to prove that you chopped it down. Or Rashi says it could be mi kuraihu. Kur is the heart of palm. You know, nowadays you can find it in the store. Nowadays they breed palm trees specially for that purpose. In those days it was just, you know, when you're chopping down a palm tree, you'd have the heart of palm available to eat. So bring me the heart of palm, and then that'll tell me the tree is dead and chopped down.
He didn't believe it.
Okay, evidently he wanted to know for sure that it was a done deal. And therefore we see there's another example where you're allowed to chop down a fruit tree. Another example, Rav Chista Chaza Tali Begufni. Rav Chista also one time saw that there were palm trees growing among his vines. He tells his oris, his sharecropper, tear him out of the cut him down. Because gufni koni dikli la koni gufni. Vines can buy palm trees, meaning that the vine costs more. They have a greater worth than palm trees. Whereas it's not the other way around is not true. Palm trees don't buy vines because they're worth a lot less. Palm trees are very common in Babel, vines less so. So therefore, this space where this palm tree is, never mind, it's not even like the case of Shmuel where it's weakening the vines, where it takes away nourishment from them, but still, this space where these palm trees are growing could be used to plant more vines, which would be worth more money. And therefore, that's a valid enough reason to chop them down.
Is it a mitzvah to grow something that's more valuable?
No, but he says he's allowed to. He's allowed to increase his assets. So, yeah. Okay. Rashi says specifically not so much the value of the grapevines, but the value of the wine that would come from them, rather. Mishnah says, Alpha Pisho Noisin Lai, even if you pay the person for the Nezek and the Tsar and so on and so forth, Einim Chalai Achi Vakish Mimenu, the Mazik is not forgiven. Is not forgiven by the Eibishter until he asks the person that he harmed for mechila. Shenemar, as we find that when Avimelech kidnaps Sarah, the Eibishter comes to him in a dream and tells him, "Ba'ata hashav eishes v'gomer, now return the man's wife and he'll daven for you," implying, in other words, you have to ask him for mechila in order that he should daven for you. Otherwise you're going to die. Otherwise, I, the Eibishter, am not going to forgive you for this. How do we know then that if the person, the Nizik, does not forgive him, that he's considered cruel? Obviously, we're talking about, there can be corner cases. There can be, for example, when he trashed his reputation in public and, he's never going to get it back. But we're talking about under normal circumstances. And how do we know that he has to be Mosul? The positive news, Avram davened to the Eibishter, by Yidbar Elakim, and the Eibishter healed Avimelech and the rest of his family. Mishnah says,
was a king,
maybe. If so, no reason to think it's any different. Okay, Mishnah continues. Ha'omer sameth eni kateyeth yodi shaber suragli. If somebody says, if one person says to another, blind my eye, or chop off my hand, or break my foot, chayev, then that person, if he does it, is still chayev. You can't say that he was moichel and he allowed you to do it. Well, the person himself who gave the permission is chayav b'din shemayim. There's nobody for him to pay. But the other person is still going to be chayav b'din adam. He can still be brought to Beis Din and made to pay for it. Al manas lifter chayav. And even if he tells him, I want you to do it on condition that you will in fact be potter, he's still chayav. Because again, a person's not a balabas over his own body. So we'll talk about the details of it in the Gemara tomorrow on Sadeh Gimel.
What about someone who's 78 ill and cannot?
That for sure not. That for sure not. You're not allowed. For sure, you're not allowed to tell somebody else to take his life, the euthanasia. No, it's also an halacha. What you can do, what it talks about in Shulchan Aruch, is you can remove side things. If you have, for example, let's say there's an external noise that's bothering the person, so he's not able to die, then fine, you can remove the source of the noise, but not to touch him directly. To pull the plug or anything. Okay. That's what the goyim do. It doesn't mean that it's mutter for us. Okay. On the other hand, krat. What if he tells the other person, tear my clothing or break my jug, and the person does it, he's still chayav to pay, but I'm not lifter potter. The difference is, if he tells him, you can do it, and I'm telling you to do it on condition that you will be potter from any payment, then he is taka potter. The person is a balabas over his own belongings. But what if he tells it? What if Reuben tells Shimon, go and tear Levi's clothing, amanas lifter, on condition that you should be potter? Then chayev ben begufer ben memoine. Then he's chayev whether he attacked the other guy's gufer or his mamon. Well, we'll see. We'll see tomorrow whether there's a chiddush there. Where is it? Turn it up on him. Kol elu sha'amru d'mei boshtei. Everything that we said in the previous Mishnah, where you have to pay a seller or a money or two or 400 or whatever, that's all the money for the boshes. But the tsar, now the tsar doesn't mean here necessarily like it meant in the rest of the parak, that it meant the actual physical pain. There are some of the Rishonim who learn that it does, that it does mean that. But Rashi over here says that no, it can mean, in other words, there's boshes, in other words, you were affiliated in front of other people, and then there's the tsar, in the sense, Rashi says, shedoyeg al boshte, he feels bad afterwards about the boshes.
That's not
the boshes. But not necessarily, though. No, that's the point where you need mechila, in other words. That's where the point where you have to have mechila for that.
How is it different from boshes?
Because there's boshes as in you caused him humiliation in front of other people, therefore you have to pay an X amount. And then there's that he himself now feels bad about it, and not just now, but later on, you have to ask him the chiddush for that. The Ravid actually makes a slightly different definition. The Ravid says there's boishes as in the sort of the objective thing, that other people see the humiliation, and the tsar is more the fact that the tsar is more, he says, I think, if I remember correctly, boishes is, for example, the fact that he felt bad. Tsar is the actual feeling, like his face turned pale and his heart rate was speeded up and whatever, all the actual physiological effects.
Why not basis the sacrifice? The tsar is continued later on also.
That seems to be what Rashi says. But again, you paid very nice, but still. The tsar, afilu hevi kol eilin nevoyis shabar olam, even if the guy brings as a korban all the eilin nevoyis, which are a very high quality of rams in the world, ein nimchalo, he still is not forgiven, ad shivakash v'menu, unless the person asks him for mechila. Shenema, the pasuk says, the Eibishter says to Rabbi Melech, Hashev eishas ish ki navihu, return this man's wife because he's a navi, v'yispalo badcha. That's what the Gemara is going to ask. Wait. V'yispalo badcha, and he will daven on your behalf. You have to ask, what do you mean? De'eshes navi bar yaduri, de'eshes achale bar yaduri. So what is the Eibishter telling him? You only have to return her because she's the wife of a navi? Relax. The answer is, Amar Shmuel Bar Nachmani, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, what do you mean? Amar Rabbi Yochanan, what the Eibishter means is like this. Hashev eishas eish mekol makom. You have to return his wife regardless. No matter who he is, she's an eishas eish. The reason why I'm mentioning Kinovi, who was to answer another point. Amrit, now you said a couple of psukim earlier, when the Eibishter comes to Avimelech in this dream and tells him you should know this woman is a married woman, where you thought she was that Abraham and she were brother and sister, and you ask, I go to Tzadik Tarek, what are the Eibishter, you kill even an innocent nation? Didn't he say she's my sister and she also said he's my brother?
That's the meaning of being innocent.
Wait. Yeah, he's arguing, I did it in all innocence. I didn't know they were husband and wife. The Eibishter is answering him, Navihu, you should know, Avraham Avinu is a Navi, or Kval Limid, and he was already able to deduce what's going to happen over here. He was able to realize, based on Nevuah, what's going to happen over here.
Listen.
He figured like this, Achsenoi Shabalair, when a stranger comes, when a guest comes to town, Al Iska Achilirshia Shailanoisa, Al Iska Ishta Shailanoisa. What's the first thing people should be expected to ask him? Do you have food? Do you have drink? Do you need a place to stay, etc.? Or do you start asking him, who is this woman with you? Is she your wife? Is she your sister? In other words, the Eibishter is telling Avimelech, don't think you're so innocent. The fact that you started with the wrong kind of questions shows that you had improper intentions over here.
Yeah.
And therefore, Kinavihu Avraham, hearing that realized the Nevuah, what's going to happen over here, that he and Sarah are going to be in danger, and therefore he said, Achoisi.
And that's the problem. If he was a Navi, he should have realized that both, if he says, she's my wife, or if she says she's my sister.
Because if he says that he's his wife, that's the same problem as in Mitzrayim, in Parshas Lach Lecha.
Correct.
That they're going to kill
Bahogu,
they'll kill me and they'll take you. Because like this. If he says it's his sister. They knew that she's going to be kidnapped, but at least then there's time for bargaining. Then at least there's time for bargaining. Mashenkin, if they take him and kill him, then that's it.
The question is, did Avram realize that by saying it's his sister, he would also trigger the same thing?
Very possibly, and if nothing else, he might have realized from the example of Mitzrayim. As a matter of fact, I think that Ramban says on the pasuk, Rashi says actually on the pasuk over there, that Sarah didn't necessarily agree to go along with it this time. The previous time in Mitzrayim, she didn't know what was coming yet. This time, she already knew from past experience she wouldn't necessarily have been willing to do this. But Avraham said to say that I'm his sister. But Avraham said that you should do it, so she went along with it.
But apparently,
no. The point is, he was a Navi to realize that. The point is, the Eibishter is saying he was a Navi to realize that if he says we're husband and wife, he could be killed. Therefore, he said, we're brother and sister, and therefore, fine, that's taking a chance that she'll be... Rashi and Chumash says something different. Right, Rashi and Chumash.
Still, paradox. If he's a Navi, he should have predicted both things.
Okay, fine. A Navi is... Okay. Yeah, okay. Rashi says a different explanation of Ki Navihu, that Avimelech is saying, how do I know he's going to take her back? What if he thinks that Itaka was Mizana with her? And Eibishter answers him, Ki Navihu, don't worry, he's a Navi and he knows the fact. Okay, fine. Yes.
That's Rashi says that.
I did see a different explanation, actually. I did see a different explanation of our Gemara over here, which is Ki Navi, who can also mean a Navi in the sense of a spokesman. Avraham and Sarah spent their whole lives traveling around and teaching people about the Eibishter, about mitzvahs, about basis shem mitzvahs in earth. One of the things Avraham always went around teaching is when a guest comes to town, don't start asking him who his female companion is. Start by asking him, do you need food and drink? Tinovihu, in other words, he spent his whole life doing this kind of thing. You should have by now learned. You, Abimelech, the king of the Plishtim, should have learned. The king of Gerar should have learned by now that you should behave the same way. Mikan, I don't remember, actually. From here we see, from this that Avimelech is arguing I'm innocent, and the Ebeshah tells him you're not innocent, we can learn from that that a Ben Noach can be killed for violating any of the Shev Mitzvah Ben Noach, even if he claims he didn't know, because he could have learned about it and he didn't. In other words, ignorance of the law is no excuse. So according to the last explanation, I said he should have learned about it because for the last 100 years Avraham has been going around and teaching this. According to the more surface explanation, it just means a ben noach was responsible to know that there are seven mitzvahs ben noach, and one of them is that you're not allowed to steal or kidnap.
If Avraham was turning around the last 100 years, then how come Abimelech didn't know about that, and he didn't know that Sarah?
It doesn't mean he didn't know. Why were people still worshiping Avodah Zarah? You know, not everybody paid attention to what Avraham is saying. That's the point for saying that Abimelech
was well known. The Torah says
fine.
He was well known.
Okay, he was well known.
Everybody knew Sarah was his wife.
Fine, but it's also not like they had pictures. You know, if they came to town, nobody recognized. Okay, I don't know. Anyway, now the Gemara is going to analyze the end of the story a little bit. The pasuk finishes off that after Avraham davened for Abimelech, then Abimelech and all the members of his household recovered. Ki otzer otzer Hashem. The pasuk says because Hashem had stocked up. A double expression, as the Torah often does. But what's the double expression? Amar Rav Elazar, shtei atziros halalu lama. Why the double expression of stopping up? Achas v'ish shichva zera. It means that in a man, one thing was stopped up, that he couldn't produce shichva zera.
What does it say?
Because the pasuk says, ki otzer otzer Hashem ba'ad po rechem. Hashem had stopped up every womb. The Gemara is darshaning, because of the double expression, otzer otzer, doesn't just mean the wombs of women, it also means other bodily orifices, other bodily openings. So one in a man shechvasera, shteim v'isha shechvasera v'leida, and with a woman two were stopped up shechvasera, which either Rashi says, in other words, that if a woman was already impregnated, then she sometimes the shechvasera dribbles out; it wouldn't be able to. And number two, giving birth. If a woman was pregnant, she would be stuck until.
When did that happen?
This is where after Avimelech kidnapped Sarah, all of a sudden this happened. And that's why that night Avimelech had this dream where the Abisha tells him, you should know this, that all of this trouble came because this woman is a married woman, and Avimelech says, I didn't know, I thought she was his sister, and Abisha tells him, what you said is worthless, you should have known better, now you better return her and ask Mechila, and Avraham will daven for you. In a man, there were two things that were stopped up. Number one, the ability to produce shechva zera, and number two, the ability to urinate. Shlosha v'isha, and three in a woman, shechva zera oktanim v'leida. The two that we mentioned before, plus urine. Ravina Amar, Sholosh v'ish. Ravina says there were three in the man, shechva zera oktanim v'pitabas, also the anus. They weren't able to go defecate either. All the people in his palace. So, yeah, it's, yeah. And above isha shechva zera v'leida oktanim v'pitabas. And that we'll learn that all from the double expression otzer, that it wasn't just that the Eibishter prevented people from giving birth, but it was the women from giving birth, but it was also the Eibishter stopped up anything that a person could produce out of their body. Until Avimelech asked Avraham for Mechila and returned Sarah. That's the point that we're making.
How long did that take?
Doesn't say. I don't know. When the pasuk continues, Ba'ad kol rechem, the pasuk continues that the Eibishter stopped up every womb. What does that come to include? Amidvei Rav Yana, filo tano gerlo shabeis Avimelech lo yitila beitzaseh. It means even the chickens in Avimelech's household didn't lay eggs during that time. Even their wombs were stopped up, in other words. It affected not only the people, but also the animals. Where do we learn, where in the Torah do we see a source for this concept that the Rabbanan say, if somebody asks for rachamim for another person, and the person who himself is davening needs that very same thing, and the Eibishter answers him first, where do we see that from?
When he davens for other people.
If Reuven needs something,
right,
and Shimon, who also needs the very same thing, davens on behalf of Reuven, then the Eibishter will answer Shimon first. Where do we see that from? Amalai says Mitzvichtiv, because you have at the end of Sefer Iyov, at the end of Sefer Iyov, it describes how the Eivishter says, I'm very upset with Iyov's three friends because they talked. They hurt Iyov's feelings. They misrepresented what the Eivishter's judgment is all about, etc. So the Eivishter says to them, you have to go to Iyov and ask him to daven for you. And the pasuk continues, Vashem Shavas Shavus Iyov Bispalle Badreu. The Eivishter restored Iyov's fortune when he davened for his friends, implying in other words that the Eivishter first forgave him and returned to him everything he had, and only then forgave them.
Yeah, on the precedence,
because he davened for them. In other words, they all needed rachmim from Eivishter for different reasons, but he davened for them and therefore. Amalei, the Rava tells him, Ah Amrit Mehalsim, okay, you're finding a source from Iyov. Vano Amin Mahocha, actually I can find a source for it in Chumash.
Should it mean he davened for them without davening for himself?
For Pashtus. Rava says, I can find a source for it in a pasuk in Chumash. I guess what happened was when Rava first asked the question, he didn't think of it. Later on, in the course of the conversation, he thought of it. Otherwise, why is he asking in the first place? Anyway, the pasuk says, "Vayispal Avraham el Elokim." The Eibush to daven to Avraham. "Vayyupar Elokim es Avimelech ves Ishtei v'Amhoris Avgeim." The Eibush to healed Avimelech and his wife and his maidservants, and they were able to give birth. And Ochtiv, and the next pasuk continues, "Vashem poka the Sarah kasher Amar Avgeim." Hashem had remembered Sarah, which usually, if the pasuk meant that this happened after the previous thing, then it would usually be "Vayifkoid Hashem es Sarah." Pokad implies something that already happened in the past. So already, before even by Yupra, the Kimus Avimelech, before the Eibushter even healed Avimelech, already the Eibushter remembered Sarah and made her able to be pregnant.
We don't need
Yehud. Right. And the passage continues, Kasher Omar, as he said, meaning the Gemara Darshan, it means Kasher Omar Avraham El Avimelech, like what Avraham said to Avimelech, namely, that as Avraham davened for Avimelech, so also the Eibushter gave Sarah that same thing ahead of that, even that she's going to become pregnant and be able to give birth easily. Interesting work, by the way, that I saw from Rav Simcha Bonim Pshitzka. He says that he said nuance in this. When we say who Sarah Flo is a dover, what it actually means is suppose that again Reuven needs something, Shimon davens on his behalf, but actually it's a situation where Shimon would be better off if Reuven doesn't get what he needs, but nevertheless Shimon. I'll give you an example of Avraham and Avimelech. Nevertheless, he goes and overrides that anyway and davens. Then he deserves that the Eibushter should answer him first. And he says that's what happened here with Avraham and Avimelech. Because what happened years later, right after Yitzchak was born, the famous thing, Litzonei Hadar, all the Litzonim of that time were all saying, Yitzchak was born from Avimelech, Sarah became pregnant from Avimelech. And the Eibushter had to make Yitzchak's face look like Avraham to prevent that. So what would happen if Avimelech hadn't been able to have any children after that? Then Avraham would be in the clear. So he would have been in a position, he could have said, why should I daven for you? Then I'm going to be in a worse position. And he still went and davened for him. Yeah. So now, having mentioned this, that Rava asked Rava Bar Mori for a source, for a vote from the Chachamim, from Torah. So now the Gemara is going to go for almost the whole rest of this Amud and most of the next one and a little bit of Tzadik Gimel Amud Aleph, different things like that, different popular expressions or statements from Chazal, where do we see a source for them in Torah? Because we know everything has a source in Torah, like a Milad Lemiriv is about Isaiah. Where's the source in the Torah for this that people, the popular expression that people say, along with the thorns, the cabbage gets damaged. Imagine, in other words, you have a cabbage patch, and you have thorns growing over there that you have to rip out of the ground. You have to weed the thorns out. Sometimes, as you're pulling out a thorn, you wind up pulling out a cabbage with it. So it's as if to say, in other words, that the people who are near Russia end up suffering along with him. Amalei dechtiv, because you have a pasuk in Yirmiyah that says Lama Terivu Elai Kuchem. Why are you all arguing against me? Peshaitim bin Lama Terivu Elai Kuchem. Peshaitim bin Neum Hashem. The Eibushter says all of you have sinned against me, implying all of you, meaning like even the Navi himself. He didn't do anything wrong, but he's the cabbage that ends up suffering with thorns. Amalei, so Rava tells him, Ask Amrit Mehalsim, you have your source there from here, from Yirmiyah. Vano Amin Mahocha, I can bring a pasuk from the Torah that shows that point. After the pasuk describes that people went out on Shabbos to gather mon, which they weren't supposed to, and the Eibushter afterwards says to Moshe, Ad Ona Me'amtem Lishma Mitzvah Sevet Teroise, how long are you, including Moshe and Aaron, Lachora, going to be refusing to keep my mitzvah? So in other words, Moshe and Aaron, in other words, it sounds like are being included in... Okay, Rashi says there's a different reason why Moshe is being included, because he should have told the people in advance. He waited until Friday, till the Nesi'im came to him, hey, we have a double portion of Mon, what's going on? And then he might remember to tell them all about the Dinim of Shabbos. He should have been telling it to them already from the beginning of the week. But the Gemara here is taking it differently.
Exactly the same if he had instructed him before Erev Shabbos.
Apparently, according to our Gemara, yes. Now you have a pasuk that you have a pasuk in Parshas Vayigash that says it says that when Yosef came to after Yosef's family came down to Mitzrayim, Yosef took miktzei echav, literally miktzei means the edge of his brothers. He took five men. Man neinu chamisha. This is Yosef brought five of his brothers to introduce the Paray. Man neinu chamisha. Which five were they? So he says, Rabbi Yechanan said, they are the five who in Parshas Vezoyis Abracha, well, that their names were repeated.
Right.
In Parshas Vezoyis Abracha, Moshe gave brachas to all the Shvatim except for Shimon.
Right.
There were five of them where the name is repeated. For example, Uladon Amar Don Gur Aryeh, Vilizvulun Amar Smach Vulun Betetecha. That's the point. So the ones that their names were repeated, the point is the Gemara is taking the view those five were the weakest of the Shvatim, and that is why later on Moshe Rabbeinu repeated their names to give them an extra chizuk, to give them an extra dose of strength.
They were the brothers that did the most harm to Yosef.
No, they're the five according to this: with Dan, Zvulun, Gad, Asher, and Naphtali. They're not particular.
No, not
any more than any of the others. So those five whose names are repeated, the weakest ones, and the point is, he wanted the weakest ones because he didn't want the strong ones because then Paray is going to want to draft them into his army. Rashi brings it on the puzzle. And Rashi brings it over here also. Fidei Shalei Yivroi, somebody is Roshe Gayosis Latrichim. He doesn't want them to choose them as generals or whatever for his armies and then burden them with that. He asks him, Yehuda nami yichbuli michbol. Fine. In Vezoyis Abracha, Yehuda's name is also repeated. Vezoyis Yehuda, vayem ashma Hashem tel Yehuda. You're not going to tell me Yehuda was one of the weakest of the brothers. He was the strongest. Amalei, lemilse Yehuda yichbol. There's a special reason why Yehuda's name was repeated. Not having to do with strength or weakness, but something else. Namely, the Amar of Shmo ben Achmeni, we learned this in Sota, Amar of Yenis, and my dichtiv yechi Ruben val yomis vihi misav misper. What does it mean? The pasuk says, let Ruben live and not die, let his people become a large number, and then the pasuk continues, v'zois li Yehuda, and this for Yehuda. What's the connection? Why are Ruben and Yehuda together, and why does he begin v'zois li Yehuda? Throughout the 40 years that the Jewish people were in the desert, Yehuda's bones were rolling around in his coffin. Why? Because, meaning his skeleton wouldn't stay together. Because back when they had the situation where Yosef is telling them they have to bring Binyamin down to Mitzrayim, and they didn't know it's Yosef, Binyamin's going to be in danger, and Yaakov is reluctant to let him go. He's the last one left over from his mother, etc. And finally, Yehuda tells him that I'll take responsibility for him. If I don't bring him back to you, I will have sinned against you forever. And therefore, because now what happened actually is in the end, when you get down to him, Sukkim, he never actually did bring Binyamin back. The Binyamin, it seems, stayed back in Mitzrayim, and everybody else went back home to bring Yaakov and the rest of the family. The point is, even if not, Rashi says differently. Rashi's in the Skyim at night. The Tanai was fulfilled. He did bring back. He did bring back Binyamin. Because he did bring back, according to the Pashto. What I just said about that he kept Binyamin by him, some Mepharshim say that, but most Mepharshim say that no. And Rashi apparently also says that no, he did bring Binyamin. All 11 of them went back, fine. But the point is, though, the Klala or the Nidui of a Tamat Chacham, even if it's based on a Tanai, still has an effect. So since Yehuda put himself in this Nidui, it still had an effect, and therefore his bones, even if the Tanai was in the sky, and therefore his bones continued to roll around. Until Moshe comes, this is in Vezoyis Abracha, when Moshe is benching the Shvatim, and he comes and davens for him. Who, after all, caused that Reuven should admit publicly that he moved his father's bed, and then the whole thing with Bila. Before that, Reuven was doing tshuva on it privately. but he never admitted it publicly until Yehuda, until the story with Tamar, when Yehuda said, "Sod coming many, she's right. It's my stuff, my cloak and so forth that I gave her, and these babies are in fact mine." And then Reuben got up and said, "As long as you're admitting, I should also admit. I interfered with my father's marital life."
Why did he do that?
That years before.
Because once
Yehuda had the courage to admit publicly, then Reuben also felt he had the courage to. Anyway, the point is, what brought that about by Yehuda? In other words, that's the connection. After giving Reuben a bracha, the next thing is the zois Yehuda. Is it right? Is this right that Yehuda should be rolling around in his coffin and not able to find rest because of him? Yehuda, because of him, Reuben did tshuva, did full tshuva. So he says, "Miyat Shma Hashem to Yehuda." So he immediately says, "Listen, Hashem, to the voice of Yehuda."
Who said that?
Moshe said. This is the Gemara is going to be quoting you piece by piece Moshe's bracha to Yehuda. The whole thing goes like this: "Vezoyt to Yehuda vayayim, Shma Hashem to Yehuda." Hashem, listen to the voice of Yehuda. "Ve'al amoy to the end, bring him to his people." "Yadav Ravloy," his hands should be powerful for him. "Ve'ezim mitzaref tiyah," and you should be a help for him against his enemy. So each of those phrases, the Gemara is going to say, help Yehuda in a certain way. When he said Shema Hashem Kil Yehuda Alei Vori L'Shapa, then his bones knitted back together. Loi Habakam Masculum Exibdor Kiyah, however, they still were not allowing Yehuda into the Yeshiva Shalmaila, so he continues Ve'al Amri to Vienna, bring him back to his people being the Neshamas in Gan Eden.
All that because he hadn't brought Benyamin.
Yeah, all that because even if he did bring Benyamin back, because he said, "Chasasu Lavi Kalayam." Loi have a yod of my kamir rabbanon or mishkal or mitzvah kahad rabbanon. Fine, he's sitting there in the yeshiva shamayla. He still wasn't able to understand what the other chachamim are saying over there and to be able to discuss in Torah with them. So Moshe continues in his bracha, yod of rav loi, let his hands be powerful for him and to be able to learn, and loi have to learn to be able to kostach in learning.
Why his hands have to do with
like this, and you do like this with your hands, but it's a metaphor for like being able to fight the fight of the battle of Torah. Loi have a solik le shmai tzal libid hilchta, fine, but Yehuda was still not able to come to a conclusion that would be valid api halacha. He was able to make points, but not points that are valid. So Moshe finishes off, the ezem itzarav tiyah, you should be a help for him against his opponents. He should be able to come out to the right conclusion. Amalei rava l'rava b'amori. Menaha milta d'amri inshi. Where do we get that? Where's the source in Torah for this that people say, basa anya azla an yusa? Poverty follows the poor. It was like in English, they say the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. I should mention, by the way, about the previous thing about the five brothers. Rashi on the Pasuk mentions that they're a different thing from the Medrash, that actually the five brothers were it's the other way around. The ones that Moshe, according to the Medrash Rabbah, the ones who Moshe repeated their names are the strong ones. Therefore, you don't need this whole explanation why he repeated
according
their
names.
According to the Medrash Rabbah, yes. Rashi brings both of them on the Pasuk. That the six Shvatim that Moshe repeated their names, they Dafka are the strong ones. The ones who he brought, not Shimon, then the five that we mentioned, Dan, Zvolun, Gad, Asher, Naphtali, and Yehuda.
They're
the strongest ones, according to the Medrash. The ones who he didn't repeat their names, the other five who he didn't repeat his name, those are the weakest ones, and those are the ones he brought to power. Anyway. So where do we see Bosa, Anya, Azla, and Yosef? Poverty follows the poor. The rich get richer, and the poor get poorer. He says we can learn it from a Mishnah. The Mishnah says in Bikurim, Ashirim Mivin Bikurim Bikalosr Shalzalva Shalkesef, the rich people bring their Bikurim in baskets made out in trays made out of gold and silver. Vaniim the Salin Etzorim Shalarava Klufa, the poor people bring their Bikurim in woven basket and in baskets woven of peeled Arava bark or peeled Arava branches. Hasalim va Bikurim Noisim Lakonim. And the baskets, along with the bikurim, are given to the kohenim. The point is, the basket, only when a poor person is bringing in a basket, the basket is also given to the kohenim. So like he loses the basket as well, not just the food, but also the basket. As opposed to the rich person brings it in a silver or gold tray, and he keeps the tray. So that's the point. The Rebbe once explained in a sicha the deeper idea of it, that it's not a bad thing for the poor person, but adab, the fact that his basket becomes part of the bikurim as well shows that he has a higher level of bittul. Like the poor person is more able to achieve aniyusa as in bittul, and therefore even his basket, even the chitzonius, is also able to go along for the ride. Yeah. Amalei, so Robert tells him, "Ask Amrit Mehalsim, you have that source from a Mishnah, but no, I mean a Mahacha, I can bring you a source from a Pasuk that shows this idea. The Tomei Yikra, the Tomei person, the Metzora, has to call out Tomei. So in other words, like not only is he tameh, but the fact that he has to announce to everybody that he's tameh, that's like poverty following the poor. That's like a poor getting poorer. Like he's made to call out that he's tameh. Marsha has a different explanation, and the Gemara explains in a different place that refers to the concept that if there's tumah, you have to mark it, as we learned way back in Mered Cotton, you're supposed to mark it with plaster or whatever. So like you have something which is tumah, and now you're forced to spend more money on plaster or whatever it is in order to mark it off to show. Actually, earlier in Amos Sefer also, in Perek Merubah, it mentioned this concept.
I assume it's an attack on the Yiddish to say that the poor get poorer and the rich get richer. I mean, if this world is equal.
The world is not necessarily equal. I mean, they wish to put each person in their position that they should be.
We're not saying that. We're saying that they're in the position they should be, but the poor get poorer and the rich get richer.
It's all how the Eivishter runs the world. It's the Derech HaTeva. That's how it is. Sometimes
it's true that the Eivishter runs the world.
Usually, not necessarily, but many times you see that. And here are examples of it. Again, it's not always. Of course, a poor person can be. Look, of course, a poor person can suddenly become rich. Hashem murders Shemashir. Hashem makes a person poor and rich in 1 second. But I'm talking about the Derech HaTeva. And again, like I say, there is a positive angle on it, like with the Bikurim, like what I said from the Sikha, that, you know, the positive angle on it is that poverty represents bittul. You're poor. In other words, you're poor represents the fact that you're poor in the Eivishter. You're poor, you in the Eivishter's presence are poor. You feel yourself poor. You feel yourself as a garnish in front of the Eivishter. And after that, the mind.
Everybody should be poor then.
Okay, some people accomplish it through being rich, Pagashmias. Different people.
Being humble through being.
Yes, sometimes you have. For example, Rebbe. You know, we learned at the end of Sota that the Rebbe was famous for Anova. Mishemes Rebbe bought for Anova v'Yerachet. It says, you know, when Rebbe passed away, then Anova passed away with him, and yet Rebbe was one of the richest people in his generation. Where do we get a source for this that the Rabbanon say? Hashkim v'echol. You should always wake up early and eat. V'kayetz mitnechama. In the summer, you should do that. Because of the heat, or in the winter you should do it because of the cold, and it was breakfast. A good breakfast protects you against these things. The Amri Inshi, and also this that people say, Shitin Ruhusi Rahut, 60 runners ran, and they still can't catch up to somebody who has breakfast in the morning. Why 60, by the way? Tosfos mentions because each season lasts 2 months. The 6 seasons, the Gemara tells us in Bava Metzia. The 4 that we're familiar with, plus 2 more agricultural ones. So each one lasts about 60 days. And Tosfos continues, that doesn't necessarily have to be literally 60. 60 is just one of the Gemara's standard figures of speech.
Where do they get this?
It's a Gemara in Bava Metzia. Each season lasts about 2 months. No, that's the question. Where do we have a source for it in Torah? That breakfast strengthens a person against the effects of the season. He says, because the Pasuk says, the Pasuk in Yeshaya, lo yu'ovu v'lo yitzma'u, they will not be hungry or thirsty, v'lo yakim, short of v'shemesh, and the hot wind or the sun won't strike them. Implying, why won't the hot wind or the sun, why won't the weather affect them? Because they ate and they drank.
What's the analogy with the way of running?
No, it's all the same thing, in other words. The point is that it strengthens the person. If it protects them against short of v'shemesh, how much more so against him? By the way, one of the Mefarshim, I think the Pnei Yeshua, says, what's the point of 60 runners? And if one person is, what's the wide up stake? He can outrace one runner. And he says, maybe Ben Yehuda says, I don't remember, that something like this. If only one runner is running, you don't feel like you have to run so fast. Okay, after a while, he'll get out of breath or whatever, you know. I don't have to run so fast. If you have 60 runners running, then one of them is going to be able to run the course, the marathon. I know I better keep up with them. Yeah. Okay. Anyway. So you have your pasuk in Yeshaya that says that. I can find you a source for it in Chumash. The pasuk is Vavadim as Hashem Elokeichem. You should serve Hashem your God. Meaning Zukriya Shema Tefillah. This refers to saying Shema and davening Shema Esrei. The pasuk continues Averach Haslach Mecha Vesmei Mecha. He will bless your bread and your water. Meaning Zupas Melech Pekit and Shemayim. Meaning that you eat bread with salt and drink a jug of water. Mikan va'elach. After that, the pasuk continues. V'asidoy semachla mikubecha. I will take away any sickness from among you. So we see that eating breakfast, the first thing after davening, strengthens a person against illnesses.
Who's bringing breakfast tomorrow? Salt.
Actually,
salt.
Bread with salt. I did see a vart, I think, from Rabbi Shalom of Bell, that path is gematria Talmud, and therefore he says it refers to learning Gemara in the morning after davening. That prevents. Then Yada, by the way, also says the word machla in this pasuk, machla can be rearranged to spell how, some of it is in Bala Turim actually also, can be rearranged to spell halechem, the bread, and hamelach, the soul, therefore we see bread and soul. And he explains also, if you take the word machla and then and add the values of the nekudas, which in the nekudas also have a gematria, then you get the gematria of the word mayim. V'tanya, and we learn in a braisa, machla zumara, when the pasuk says, the Eibishter says, I'll take away machla from among you, specifically machla refers to the gallbladder. V'loma nikra shema machla, why is it called machla, sickness? Sh'shmoyne m'shloysha chaloyin yeshva, there's 83 different types of illnesses that can be traced to the gallbladder, because machla, the gematria of Hakei Havu, that's the gematria of the word machla, is 83. V'kulon, and all of them can be counteracted by eating bread with salt in the morning and drinking a jug of water. Especially if you have gallbladder problems, I guess.
No.
Okay. Another one of these sayings. Where do we get this that the Rabbanan say? If your friend calls you a donkey, put a saddle on your back. In other words, accept his criticism. Don't answer him back. Where do we see that in a pasuk? Amalei d'chtiv, because you have a pasuk, when Hagar is running away from Sarah, the Malach comes to her, and he says, "Vayomar Hagar shifchat Sarah, emizeh bas v'anatelech." He says, Hagar, maidservant of Sarah, and he specifically calls her by that title, maidservant of Sarah. Where are you coming from and where are you going? Matomer, and she didn't contradict him, even though now she's running away from Sarah. She doesn't want to consider herself Sarah's maidservant anymore. But still, she gives in and answers, I'm running away from Sarah, my mistress. So we see that she accepted that I'm still the maidservant, that she's the mistress. Where do we get this that people say when there's something disgraceful about yourself, something disgraceful? Yeah, kadim amra. You should volunteer the information. Don't try to hide it until somebody else finds it.
What does that mean?
Wait, amalei because you have the pasuk in Chayisara vayomar eved Avraham anochi. When Eliezer sits down for the meal with Besuel and Lavan and the family, he starts out by saying, I am Abraham's servant. Right away, he mentions the fact that he's the servant. So Marashah says, what's the difference between these two things? He says the difference is the previous one about the guy calling you a junkie means even when it's not necessarily a justified criticism. In this case, for example, Hagar is running away from Sarai. She really isn't her maidservant anymore for all practical purposes. But still, she accepts it. But that's a higher level. Therefore, it's not something that people say. It's something that Abraham says. Whereas this one is talking about when there's something that you know the facts are true, don't try to hide it, volunteer it yourself. Don't even wait till the other guy calls you a junkie, volunteer it yourself, where it's justified, where it is true. And that's something that everybody can do, and therefore Damri Inshi, regular people say that as well. That's what Marsha says. Another one, where is a source in Torah for this, for the expression that people say, the goose walks along with his head bent downward, the ene metaifi, but his eyes are still looking upward. That's a figure of speech, in other words, like you have, even a person is walking, even a person is humble, like a person is humble, like he walks with his head down a little bit like a goose. Nevertheless, he shouldn't be so humble, he shouldn't be so self-effacing that he doesn't look out to ask for something that he needs. Rashi says in Torah, in Parnassah, if somebody owes him money, etc. In other words, you want to be honored, but you don't want to be a doormat. Where's the source for that in the Torah? I'm going to say, because you have a pasuk where Abigail comes to David, her husband Nabal has treated David very disrespectfully, and David is on the war path and is about to go and have Nabal executed as a rebel. Abigail comes with a present of food and then convinces David, we looked about it in Megillah, that you're going on the wrong path. Anyway, she says to him in the course of the conversation, she says to him, "The hate of Hashem Ladoni, Hashem will do good for my master," meaning that eventually that you'll become king. The Zacharta Asamasecha, you should remember your maidservant. So like she's giving him a hint, like remember me later on when things are good for you. And sure enough, after Nabal died, shortly after that, David married her. So we see that even though she's humble and then presenting herself as a supplicant to David, she's still looking out for herself. But in the future, make sure to look out for me. Yeah. She wears a source for this that people say. Shikin tachli mafia lakocha 60 60 types of avelos. Tachli Rashi translates avelos and machoivas, the mourning and pain. 60, again, 60 is meant as like a large indefinite number. Come lekocha to the truth, the kol chavre shama, who hears the sound of somebody else eating, veloy ochal, and he himself doesn't eat. In other words, when somebody else is eating near you and you can't eat, it makes you suffer a lot. Where's the source for that in Torah? I'm going to just see because you have a pasuk in Malachim, at the beginning of Malachim Aleph. Adoniyahu, one of David's sons, is trying to seize the kingship for himself. He got together a number of the leaders of the army and so forth, and then is making a whole party for them. Nathan Anavi comes to tell David what's going on, so that he should go and preempt them by appointing David as king. And he tells him in the course of his report, he says, "V'li ani avdecha, to me, I'm your servant. Ulo tzadik hakoyen, ulo v'nayahu ben yayada, ulo shloima avdecha loy kara, he didn't invite any of us." So in other words, in context, obviously, he's mentioning all of this to say, like, look, we're loyal to you, and Shlomo is the heir apparent, and yet he didn't invite them, so obviously he's not just making a party for the fun of it, he's trying to make himself king. But in taking it a little bit out of context, the fact that he mentions himself first, that he didn't invite me to the party, is like a way of saying, like, you know, and he didn't even invite me to the party, like, look at this, you know, they're all eating and I'm going hungry.
So that could be misconstrued in a way that, basically, if he had been invited, he wouldn't sign.
Right. No. Obviously, he wasn't invited because he knows that Shlomo is supposed to be the next king. He's the one who brought David the original Nebuah.
Right.
That Shlomo. But still, the way he phrased it implies that there's an additional thing on top of that: the fact that they were eating and I'm not. By the way, this
is mentioned.
Because that. Okay. I have a source for it. And because in order to give
no,
a source
for
it. Okay.
Well. Okay.
Yeah. Tosfos Shantz, by the way, mentions an interesting thing. He said the Gemara had mentioned 60 kinds of pain,
right.
And usually we say 60 is an indefinite number. But he says here we can see it means exactly, because the word ani is gematria 61. So I'm implying there's me, and then there's the 60 amounts of pain that I'm suffering because I wasn't invited. Amalei, so again, Rava tells him, ask Amos Mehalsim, you have that source in Malachim for that. I can bring your source from the Torah. The pasuk is Va'ivir Yitzchak Oyla Sarah. You know, Yitzchak brought Rivka to the tent of Sarah, his mother. Va'yikachas Rivka Vatiloi Isha Va'yerver. He took Rivka as a wife. She took Rivka. She became his wife, and he loved her. Va'yinochem Yitzchak Achri. You know, Yitzchak was comforted after the loss of his mother. Uchdib Basra. And the very next pasuk is Va'yosef Avraham Va'yikach Ishur Shmak Torah. Avraham then remarried and married Torah. So we see Alderach, like, it doesn't only apply to food. In other words, the point is, once Yitzchak got married, then Avraham realized, like, wait a minute, I'm missing something without being married also, and he went and got married. Therefore, we see the same idea, like when somebody else is eating and somebody else is joining.
He was an Avi.
Okay, but nevertheless, you still, sometimes you need that extra push.
Even when you're an Avi?
Yes, even when you're an Avi. Okay, we'll continue tomorrow, Beis Hashem. I mean, by the way, as far as that, the Medrash actually says that how came it that Avraham married Torah at that time is because Yitzchak actually, when it says before that Yitzchak was in Be'er HaHayroi, and that's where Rivka and the whole caravan met him, he had, Rashi mentions that on the pasuk actually, he had gone there to bring Hagar back to remarry Avraham. But like even he himself is still working on it. Yitzchak himself, before he even got married, before Rivka even came to him, he went to Be'er HaHayroi to find Hagar and bring her to Avraham. And therefore, so now, after he married Rivka, then Abraham went ahead and married Hagar.
And she did Tshuva.
She did Tshuva, yeah. That's the Rashi mentions on the pasuk over there, that she was called Keturah, because Maaseh annoyed the Torah, or her deeds were sweet.
After Sarah pushed her away, what happened?
That's the point. After Sarah pushed her away, eventually that had an effect, and she did Tshuva. And therefore, she was worthy again to become a wife to Abraham, a full wife actually to Abraham.
After Sarah passed away.
Yeah, after Sarah, yeah.